Welcome to the Nerd Party.
I'm Darren Moser.
I'm Philip Gilfus.
I'm Daniel Prue.
And this is City Alpha 3.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to SETI Alpha 3, a Star Trek podcast. I'm your host, Daniel Prue, and joining me, as always, are my illustrious co-hosts, Darren Moser and Philip Gilfus. Now, guys, I don't know if you noticed, but it seems maybe another ship crashed nearby? Does anybody remember the official first contact policies of Starfleet? It's been so long.
Well, that crash actually knocked us out for like an entire week. I lost consciousness, so I'm just coming to, so I can't remember at all.
I think, is this one where we send them a bunch of pizzas to them that they didn't order?
No, that's Dine and Dash. We don't. That's not the right way.
Oh, I thought we always just prank them to cut. You know, welcome to them to the neighborhood.
That seems like a risky first contact. Like, that would probably pay off in, like, 10% of the cases. But, you know, when we come across those species that only speak in pranks.
The Prankians. Oh, yes.
or we'll remove their leg, because I heard that's a great prank.
Oh, yeah. That's an Orville reference right there.
okay, that will be edited out of the podcast.
So, yeah, actually, guys, what I wanted to talk to for... a very timely reason. April 5th is, of course, First Contact Day, and it is now May 28th. So no, it's not. Sorry.
You actually made me look at the calendar. I'm like, wait, is that?
We're closer to Captain Picard Day than we are like.
It was something I thought of at the time, but I kind of forgotten about it. And then when I needed a topic for this week, this is what I came up with. But I wanted to talk about First Contact, not the episode and not the movie, but the event of First Contact. But I wanted to throw a little bit of a twist in here. We were very fortunate that I think, and this, that's my thesis here, is that we were very fortunate that the Vulcans found us. And over the episode, I kind of want to explore what might have happened if it wasn't a Vulcan ship that landed in Montana, if it was instead fill in the blank. What would have happened to humanity? So I wanted to go through this real quick. Not real quick, but I want to go into this and have your guys' thoughts. Let's just start with the basic premise of First Contact. In Star Trek chronology, it's kind of a really fortuitous happenstance situation of what happens in with the First Contact event. Humanity has just survived, barely, World War III. We've made it past where there's still some, obviously some internal issues that we're having, but we're also reaching for the stars, at least a section of us.
You mean with your hand kind of out there and you're kind of looking up to it.
Exactly. And it just so happens that there is a Vulcan spacecraft close enough to detect us. It's a kind of a really beautiful Star Trekian sentiment. I really like the idea. That, and of course they hit the nail pretty hard on the head in First Contact when, of course, it's the Phoenix comes literally from an old missile. But so that's fine. Well, we're going to keep all that.
How did it land, Daniel?
We never know. We never ever do learn that. But
carefully.
Yeah, very carefully, I guess. But so let's just real briefly just talk about the basic outline of the First Contact scenario. It's kind of cool, right? You guys like that sort of thing?
Yeah, I mean, Riker and Geordi were there. It was pretty cool. Drunk pilot. Ooby-dooby. I mean, what can you not like?
Magic carpet ride. Right. I mean, it was number one that year for obvious reasons.
It's because there were no more charges due to nuclear fallout, but it was number one, and that's the point.
If there had been. Yeah, and like you said, Daniel, I like how it's not just, oh, they were in the neighborhood. It's we drew their attention because of an achievement of humankind, and it was time. And then that would later affect, you know, the Federations and humans, you know, governing of when we do first contact with other species. But yes, I always am down for hypotheticals, especially when they don't seem like they're going to go really well.
Well, no, this just takes me back to the I was going to say all old Marvel title, but they probably maybe still do it, but the whole What If Marvel titles, which I always liked in the 90s, because I think they got kind of weirder as they went on, but it'd be a cool, like, you know, pivotal Marvel events in the comics, and just be like, you know, I remember being a big Captain America guy. I remember, like, What If Punisher had been picked as Captain America? You know, so, yeah, because that's basically when Captain America gave up being Captain America, or at least when he was fired or whatever, you know, they picked Frank Castle instead, you know. So it's interesting stories just to, you know, go on. You always have the Watcher, you know, telling the story. So I sort of like, you know, having the Watcher be like,
we're bored with normal reality, so what if something extra crazy happened?
In your universe, the Vulcans landed first contact, but there are other worlds that exist. Let us take a trip.
And I thought it would be a really interesting just thought experiment, you know, conversation piece to go into this, because Vulcans tend to be pretty nice people if they're a little standoffish, but
a little controlling, and though. Patriarchal.
Yeah, certainly. They're not perfect, but I think they would have been the lesser of many evils. So we're going to go down a list here, but I'm going to actually make this pretty freeform, guys. If you have an idea that you want to talk about, we'll do it. Just throw it out here at any point. But I'm just going to start with, of course, the most famous race. And this is going to be a very short conversation.
The most famous race of all.
The Klingons. So the Klingons found us. They're just going to kill everybody.
Now, Daniel, is this the Klingons or the Klingons?
Not the Klingons.
Okay.
The Klingons, because they were Klingons first in Enterprise. Oh, wait, actually, that's true. Excuse me. Yeah, no, in Enterprise. Then in Discovery, they were Klingons, and then they moved to Klingons, then they're back to Klingons afterwards. So these are the traditional Klingons.
Now, is this Discovery, I can't insert a word they're saying, Klingon?
So what do we think would happen? I mean, the Klingons don't, I'm sure they don't have an official first contact policy, but it's not going to go well for humans.
Shoot first, ask questions later.
Yeah, they're probably like, we detected, you know, I still like the fact of the warp flight being the inciting incident in all of these, and it's like, oh, there's some spacefarers over there. Let's go check them out. And then they realize they vastly outgun us and out, you know, power us. And I think they just level Montana.
Well, now I don't know. Do we actually know the level of Klingon technology during this time period?
That's a good question. That is something I didn't even consider when I was coming up with this concept, is where are those species in relation to their own technology? At this point, they're all warring factions, right? I think.
Well, if we're to believe Discovery.
Right.
Well, I guess Enterprise is before that, which...
Enterprise before.
Oh, yeah, that's my head.
Enterprise is about 100 years after First Contact, right?
You're right. Yeah, because Archer's dad and all that.
So we just have to retro back. I mean, look, we went from warp 1 to warp 5 in 100 years. And that's, like, I've always felt that most all of the other races that we encounter have been spacefaring longer than we have. Like, it seems like a super normal thing for them. Mm-hmm. But...
I mean,
there's the one we talk about and this is one of the races I want to talk about later, because it's, I think, one of the more interesting conversations. But Quark mentions to Sisko in one episode that I can't even remember the line, but it was something along the lines of, like, we were in space when you guys were still nuking each other. Like,
right.
Like our species has been spacefaring longer than you've even been around, basically, is how it goes. So that's an interesting point. I don't know about Klingons specifically.
So, but let's even rudimentary, like, say they're just slightly above us. You know, they have warp speed. They obviously have boom, boom, bang, bangs. Worst case, they have sharp metal things.
It's a bird of prey with a torpedo and, like, you know, it's a single scout craft. You know, it's still not an armada ship or whatever.
Well, yeah, and that'd be interesting if they landed.
That's what I'm saying. I'm picturing that same scene.
Scout party.
Yeah.
It's coming down and all of the people gather and, you know, the thing comes down and, okay, instead of a Vulcan offering his live long and prosper salute, you literally have 18 Klingons coming out with batleths, like, just charging forward, you know?
But it makes me...
I still feel that the Klingons would come out, not swinging,
right,
but they would, like, come out in force, and then, like, they would realize that we were just nothing and then just take what they wanted.
But the,
and if we tried to resist, they would just kill us.
Is there anything to take? I don't know. It depends upon your view of Klingons, whether they're just going to be barbarians or whether they have some rational basis. In other words, what does Earth have that they want? Like, assuming that, you know, they land, and they, like you said, they sort of just suss things out. They're like, well, this is a pretty crappy world. And because at this time, you know, other than Cochrane making a warp ship, there's not much going on Earth. You know, like you said.
Would they want us as slaves?
I don't know. I don't
really feel like Klingons are really much into the slave trade, except for, like, the prisons. Right. So...
what would they do? I don't know.
We don't have to lithium here.
I think it depends
here,
a lot on,
you know.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
And Earth just had a nuclear war, so the planet's probably not looking super great at the moment.
Is there some metal that we... because we don't usually have any of the space metals. Like, you know, we don't have duranium or, you know, trilithium or, you know.
Yeah, I don't think they would invade
us.
We
have lithium.
Yeah.
That's just regular lithium.
Yeah. I mean, they can have all our batteries. I just don't think there's many left at this point.
Yeah, I don't think they would invade us just to invade us. I don't really know what they would do. If they landed, maybe they would just be a bunch of drunken Klingons looking for a good time.
and maybe they actually get along better.
Yeah,
better.
They would discover tequila and you know, a little spritz. See, a good mixed drink, guys. Have you ever had a blood wine with a little bit of tequila and then, like, a Red Bull?
So are we saying that the Klingon first contact could actually be better than the Vulcan first contact?
It would be a better party. I mean, they would engage in the dancing, you know.
And then they just leave, never to speak of it again.
Yeah, and it just becomes, like, you know what? It becomes like their Fort Lauderdale for Klingons. They just stop by, have a fun time, and go on their way.
Well, you know,
that could be interesting, where they actually start to come by periodically for drinks, and we start to try to trade with them to get, you know, quote unquote future tech, but it's, like, really hard to get anything worthwhile, and they're not really forthcoming with teaching us how to use it. So it's kind of like we've now entered into the spacefaring rage, but it's, like, in the black market. That's the only way we can get things.
And also, first contact with the Vulcans unified the planet, but theoretically first contact with the Klingons, and I don't know, Cochrane was pretty cool, but, you know, I don't know who that whole group there at Bozeman, you know, whether, you know, because what are the Klingons going to trade with? Yes, they have technology, but what's their technology emphasis? Weapons. So suddenly some people still have some grudges from World War III, and now they're like, hey, now we got the weapons, and now it's suddenly, you know...
I'm picturing the beginning of In a Mirror Darkly, where the everything starts to go bad, and it's just,
well, it's a good point because I wanted to bring that up about In a Mirror Darkly. That's the only, obviously they take that scene and turn it on its head, where instead of welcoming the Vulcans with open arms,
we kill them and take their stuff.
Yeah, so clearly, that is one of two ways to go. Obviously, that's literally the mirror of what Star Trek says should happen, which is fine. But I'm kind of with you guys. I'm not exactly sure what the Klingons would do, because I don't think they would invade us for resources or slave labor or anything like that.
And I don't think it's like they're provoked. So honestly, they would either. I think it, like Philip was saying, I think if they came down and found something like alcohol or something that they actually wanted, I think it would actually not go too bad if we could get past the language barrier.
Yeah, if Cochrane was more of like a rough and tumble kind of badass kind of guy, and like got into a scrape with one of them and earned their respect, it could go
like in a drunken
well.
State.
I think Lily
like,
could probably
take it seriously.
Earn their respect.
Oh yeah, Lily would. Yeah, Lily would be a perfect candidate. That would be really interesting.
I mean, she just defeated the Borg, so she's super ready.
And if that was the case, if that the humans somehow gained the respect of the Klingons in some sort of, you know, situation, what would that mean for the long term? That's kind of the more interesting question here. Like you said, Philip, if the Vulcans came and unified Earth, like the fact that there are now aliens and this is something we have to deal with, that unified the planet, would certainly the Klingons wouldn't unify us in the same way. They would probably, in fact, only kind of encourage the discord that World War III happened. But we'd have better weapons at that point. You know, it would be interesting to see.
Well, maybe it would unify in a different way. Instead of bringing everyone together, it's one group now has future weapons, so they basically conquer the planet.
Yeah, yeah.
So you get the same unification, but in a very different way.
The Terran Empire.
It kind of feels like that would be a better start to the Terran Empire.
It could
Empire
almost
than...
be like, and we might even be a protectorate of the Klingon Empire. You know, we have a puppet government.
Right.
You know,
I think they could see us as like a child race, but they like us. And so, you know, they're not going to wipe us out. But
we'd be like their Orions, you know, or Orions, however you pronounce it.
Yeah, it would make sense, right? Like, we're physically weaker. But we have like a, you know, we have a spunk that they like, yeah. And we have drinks.
And we're intelligent.
I mean, just like you have Orion Town on Kronos, according to Discovery, you'd have Human Town also on Kronos. So
I'm going to Humanville.
Yeah, you get that Budweiser Classic served to you. You know, it'd be great.
All right, cool. I like that. That's cool. That actually went in a very different direction than I was expecting.
It did.
So let's keep on going, because I don't want to spend all, you know, the whole time on one race. Let's talk about...
Well, you're doing alphabetically. I assume Kelpians would be next. But
Kelpians, yes, that would be very interesting. No, I'm not actually doing it. I'm actually doing it in terms of... Well, there's no real...
Kind of like popularity.
Yeah, popularity. So we'll do Romulans next.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was going to say, that'd be
which
next,
I imagine will be a much different
that would
outcome.
Be a much
yeah,
different
that's
outcome.
That's not going to go well.
Well, this is literally, I think, just... Humanity becomes a slave.
Yeah, remember, because Romulans always hide their true intentions, so...
Right. It could actually go really similar to the Vulcans, except for they have underneath, they're totally setting us up for takeover, and they would play the long
game. See, the hard problem is, and I don't know, you, as I say this, I'm thinking about this, the hard problem is we always hear the Romulan Empire, but I don't know any race they've ever subjugated, other than, you know, their neighbors. The Remans. Yeah, but,
yeah.
Like, mm-hmm. Who else is in the Romulan Empire? Yeah, like, with Klingons...
Except Romulans.
Kind of, I mean,
yeah.
I don't know if I necessarily know anything against the Klingon Empires. Maybe it's the same problem. Because all you ever see is other Klingons, and with the Romulan Empire, it's just other Romulans. So it's like, I don't know what their subjugation looks like.
So I imagine that the initial experience, the coming down and handshaking and all that, could be very similar, because the Romulans put up a nice, polite front. Mm-hmm. But they very quickly become, like, where in Enterprise we
the
see
subjugators.
The we see the frustration because it feels like the Vulcans are holding us back. I can see the Romulans actually holding us back, like completely being like, no, we're in charge, you do what we say at this point. And like you say, Philip, we're just entirely subjugated to this other race.
But then I think that they see they'd be more sneaky. I mean, it would make us feel, you know, what they would do is we would have unlike the Vulcans, who held back technology, I think the Romulans would give it to us, but then there would be failures in the lab.
Welcome to our star empire. Yeah. It's all great. You're now a protectorate.
Yeah, and I think they would kind of drip drop a little bit more technology than the Vulcans would. Again, I don't know, what's their end game? I mean, what do they want? I mean, enslaved Earth, but for what purpose?
I just think it would be territory and, probably just territory and resources. Like, not like... Super
or it could be
resources,
a foothold for Vulcan, because we're pretty close to Vulcan. It's like one of our closest neighbors. So if they owned Earth, that's like...
How much are just the
that's
planet?
That's like... that's like when nice. Russia, you know, had connections with Cuba. You know, Cuba's right next to
us. Oh, so they're
going to
put a nuclear missile base on Earth. I like it. I like it. And then...
They don't even need to put one. It's right there already in Montana.
And then the Vulcans would have to decide whether they want to invade Earth in order to preempt a Romulan invasion. I like it. Political intrigue. Because that's what the Romulans are
about. They build their own Utopia Planitia.
Oh, that's what it is.
Mars is actually way more interesting to them than Earth.
The Romulans do encourage us, but their reason is, if we're going to use what you just said, to build up our fleet. But then again, it's not to make Earth better, but it's to use Earth's ingenuity and resources. We're going to perform way more, you know, than they thought we were capable of, because we know that's Starfleet Earth. Or Star Trek Earth, but then it is because they want a fleet against the Vulcans, ultimately.
And like you said, I agree. I think they would give us more. They'd give us more technology faster because we weren't. We're still not ready for it. Like, we haven't earned it and earned the mental and societal discipline to have replicator and, you know, faster than light and all this other technology. So that helps us stay under their heel because they're still kind of spooning it out.
And because we don't know that much, you know, with the Vulcans, they don't tell us anything. The Romulans would tell us propaganda. Like, the Vulcans
right.
The most worst species.
True.
You know, you need to defend yourselves and, you know, build a space station.
It's like it's the first day at school and the bully befriends you and sours you against all the actual nice people because you only have their point of view.
You soured the milk!
We would have, like, Long Live the Empire would, you know, be the common greeting or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like the Hail Hydra. Like, if everybody would, you know, if you didn't act in line with the Romulans, what the Romulans
you
wanted,
would disappear.
You would, yeah. Like,
by
exactly, like, think of, like, reunification, or unification, yeah. I guess it's called. It would be like that. It, like, Earth would look like Romulus does in unification.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Just be an extension.
Daniel, I think we should start eating our soup if we don't want to appear conspicuous in front of the...
Awkward, yeah. yeah. So, okay, let's keep moving. Let's keep moving because we've got a lot of species to cover. Next is one I thought... I really had a lot of interesting thoughts about, and I want to hear what you guys think. What if the Ferengi found us?
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
It's not going to be good.
I don't think it's
because we know for sure that they're advanced, like, well beyond our abilities.
Yeah.
See, but they, I mean, and I think the sad part is, I mean, they're a stagnant culture then. If they're
right.
The same thing 24, you know, 200 years later. But anyway.
But so the thing is, like, just for like an insight into a Ferengi's thoughts into mm-hmm. human culture, we get in Little Green Men, we get Quark start to scheme a little bit about what he is going to do to these primitive humans. He starts to talk about, oh, I can sell you nuclear weapons, you know, and I won't sell them to the Russians and all this sort of stuff. It doesn't take very long for them to immediately start to sow some discord here on Earth. So I don't... they're going to take advantage of us in the most...
Yeah, but they could also make the same mistake that Quark did, which was you don't want to... If you're...
Never trust the dog.
Well, if you're captured or if you're talking to Group A, you don't want to start saying, oh, well, we'll just go give weapons to your enemies when you're still in contact. Like, because that's when... the U.S. government kind of turned on them.
Now, the hard part is we have, I would assume at this point, a failed economy. So we're not attracting.
Right.
Now, the exploitation, again, what do they want from us? I don't know. We have some gold, I assume, still buried somewhere.
Worthless
exactly.
gold.
Worthless.
But then that is the whole thing where they may end up helping us because they're exploiting us. But, you know, we will sell you technology. And it might be like...
They're just happy it doesn't rain
yeah,
so
yeah,
much.
Like, here's a bunch of crappy shuttles or something. But, like... Still, it's technology we don't have. So, like, we'll become sort of like a little bit smarter packlids where we're just getting our technology, like, from, you know,
wow.
third-rate technology. But, again, it's better than what we have. So it's all going to be sort of piecemeal,
right.
whatever.
Yeah, I can see them, you know, like, the idea of the Ferengi in the first place is just capitalism run amok, like,
right.
given total free reign. So I can see them, I mean, not necessarily being, they're not going to be evil. They're not going to
no.
just.
Well, maybe they're like, let's just restart your economy because it's gone.
Yeah.
So we're going to, so maybe it's less about the technology and more about now Earth is basically running on a Federation, on a Ferengi economy because we didn't have one and they restarted it. So, I mean, everyone's now reading the rules of acquisitions
yep.
and... You know, it's all based off of that because in order to be in the great exchange or whatever, like to actually trade and buy and sell, you have to obey their
rules.
Great
river of commerce.
The great river
stream. See, I would almost picture that because, I mean, in some ways we'll see them as our saviors because they're offering all these wonderful things, I mean, at a price. But, you know, capitalism is not unknown to us here on Earth. So we'll be like, okay, we get it. I mean, we see what you're doing. But we're not in a position to argue. And so whatever, sure, you can have mining rights or whatever. But I think, and so I think it'll become to a point where once we start going on our own, they're going to have to, like, the Ferengi will have to actually make sure we have a lot of internal conflict. Otherwise, we'll overthrow them eventually.
So that's what I was thinking about, was, like, the Ferengi, like, if they installed their form of government or of governance on the
their
planet.
Their board of directors.
Of course, at the beginning, they're going to be top dogs. They're literally going to be the 1%, quote unquote, who control like 50 to 75% of the actual wealth of the planet. But I could see them very easily, like us outsmarting them, like little by little, some. There's going to be one person at first who becomes the first.
All it takes is one man.
Yeah, there's that person who makes the. A deal that the Ferengi don't realize is not in their favor, and then that gets, and now he owns a continent,
yep.
And now he owns a country, a small moon.
I have one word for you, Australia.
Yeah, and I don't really know if Australia is the one you want, but yeah, and then by 100 years from now, or from then. We're still based off of the principles, but like we're on par with the Ferengi as far as a species,
right? Because I mean, and I don't know, it's hard to tell how humanity would react, because according to Star Trek, we certainly become our best from the Vulcans, and why is that? Because again, the Vulcans represent logic, which of course we're not necessarily a logical species. So, what is it about the Vulcans that help us grow? Or is it our reaction to the possibilities? And so at what point does the alien value system change our evolution?
Well, and
right, and there's the mix. Because like you said, it's not just the Ferengi value system. It's the Ferengi value system mixed with human ingenuity and human history. It's not going to just be another Ferenginar. It's going to be...
New Ferenginar.
New Ferenginar.
Well, that's kind of, part of why I had this idea in the first place. Like, Vulcans had no intention of turning Earth into New Vulcan.
Right.
And, a lot of other species would. They would take those... But I'm sure that a lot of the... Especially, the Federation... the Andorians and the Tellarites, I guess, but you assume that all of these people, the Federation Charter has this stuff laid in here, like if you encounter a new species, this is what you're supposed to do, this is what you're not supposed to do, because you are, the Prime Directive exists for a reason, and even if you are beyond the Prime Directive in that you are now encountering somebody that's spacefaring, you still don't want to infiltrate or change their culture too much,
Right.
So what would the Tellarites be like?
That's a good question. I don't think we know enough about Tellarite.
Yeah, I mean, we know their psychology, but we don't know, again, what drives them. Again, I guess that's the point. Even if some of these species detected a warp signature, would they give a blank, okay, well.
Yeah, I don't know if the Tellarites
But, I mean,
would.
Obviously they have to. I mean, okay, I'm thinking out loud. This is going to sound weird. But obviously the Tellarites have to care because they have international relations or interstellar relations. I mean, they're not an insular culture. Maybe they are, but they're not anymore, at least not by the 23rd, 24th centuries. So they obviously care for whatever reason, whether it's just trade or whatever. And so they're still going to stop, I guess, to see what we have to offer. But
do you think that there is a part of the Prime Directive or somewhere in the Federation Charter that says, basically... If you encounter a spacefaring civilization, you are obligated to interact with them to establish relations.
I think there is in that. I mean, also it made me think, because remember the Vulcans, they did make first contact, but they had also been observing us.
Yeah.
So it wasn't just like they literally were passing through the neighborhood and had like, oh hey, let's just. There was like no, they felt that
too primitive.
We had reached a point that. We were ready for their first contact.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not sure, but well, let's keep going down the list here, and let's see, what do we have next? Oh, here's a fun one: the Cardassians.
Oh gosh.
Well, we know how that goes. So, what would Terra Nor look like in orbit of Earth?
Yeah. Where would it be mining? What would it be?
If you just mine, copper, I mean, we still have minerals and stuff. Like, that's still there.
Our technology inhibits what we can do, but you know, if someone has it, they'll exploit it. There's gonna be lots.
There's gonna be lots
of fracking going on.
Yeah.
There's not a lot to say with Cardassians.
Not good.
Basically, we see what Cardassians do when they kind of find...
They liberate. I mean, they improve societies, Daniel. I mean, Gul Dukat talks about this all the time. So where would...
When will the humans just acknowledge that it was a blessing that I was their dictator? It could have been much, much
when
worse.
When we arrived, you were facing nuclear fallout. You couldn't even feed yourselves. But when the Cardassian Union came, we helped you. We build schools.
Oh, boy. Yeah, spoken like a true fascist. Anyways, I'm going to open it up here. There's a bazillion races in Star Trek and a lot of interesting ones. The one that that came to my mind was the Darmok people.
Children of Tama.
Yes, Tama. And I thought we'd just be confused.
Yeah.
We end up just shooting them, I think.
Would they beam Zefran Cochrane into an isolated place for a one-on-one with their captain?
Well, they're already in Montana. Well, I mean, how much more isolated?
That's true. That's true. But there's lots of interesting races in Star Trek. Do you guys have any ideas for something fun or neat that you'd want to see?
So, Denobulans?
Well,
I mean, we could have optimism.
Denobulans, actually.
We could learn about their interesting marriage approaches.
True.
You kid, but I think Denobulans would be one of the best races for humanity.
Hello,
Zefran.
And Zephyrin's just like, oh, dear Lord, not this guy again.
I think it would be tremendously good for humans to be visited by Denobulans in this day and age.
I think that could go
well.
I mean,
we're going to need help rebuilding our population, so maybe the whole, you know,
What about Beta Zeds?
Beta Zeds also would be very good for humanity, I think. They would be a very healing race for humanity because we would finally get past all this sort of nonsense that we deal with on a day-to-day basis and really
It'd
get
help
to
us unpack our psyche.
Well, then the problem would be if it's... And I don't know. It depends how... Because keeping it in the Star Trek universe, but, like, would people have problems with telepaths? Because, you know, eventually they'll be, you know, intermarriage or whatever, and so then... You'll have human telepaths or human empaths or whatever. And, you know, will we be trusting of that? Will we have the social maturity of how to handle a telepath species? You know, so.
Yeah.
It would be an interesting experience. I don't know. Well, first of all, it's kind of weird that Beta Zeds ever developed, like, tongues and mouths like we do because they don't need to communicate the same way that we do. But
well, I would assume that they developed normal communication and then a telepathic ability.
You would think they would have to be at least parallel evolutions. Like that would be a long time coming. But anyways, that's more of a science-y issue than anything. I think that Denobulans / Betazoids are both great examples of species that would teach humanity a lot.
What about Bolians?
I was thinking of Benzites, actually, because they would tell us what to do. Like their theories and plans are the best, and this is how.
See, I think that would be interesting because they're just going to be like, instead of passive aggressive Vulcans, they're just going to be passive aggressive Benzites. So, like,
yeah, pretty much.
I mean, it would almost be the same, except you.
Bolians, as far as we know, are basically humans that are blue. Like, we really know nothing about.
They love life.
Bolian
they seem and they're talkers. Oh gods, they're talkers.
Yeah, they like to talk.
They're barkeeps.
What do you think is the most closely related species to humans in Star Trek? Like, what would you say?
I'd say Bajorans.
Bajorans are very, very close, yeah. I think, for sure.
Yes. What if a solar Bajoran vessel detected our warp signature and landed on the planet? You know, a lot of people say that the ship didn't make it to Earth, but I believe it did.
I'd say Bajorans are the closest, but I haven't put too much thought into
what
it.
What if Robo-Lady
I'm just like, what
race from Discovery?
Jeez.
I'm trying to think of, like, what race would we bro out with? Like, what would be like, oh, hey, man, it's cool to see you. Like, it's not, there's no, like, you know, inherent social barriers there. Like, we would just be friends with because of how similarly their attitudes towards us are. I don't know that there is a space in Star Trek because, of course, the alien race.
That's the whole point, is they're not supposed to
be
humans.
They're created to kind of contrast us. But
they're a mirror to us too.
Well, with the Nausicaans, we'd finally have some decent Dom Jot around here, because I don't know if you guys have tried to find
Dom Jot lazy, Dom Jot poor.
Now, and then, of course, we could do a whole episode about like the obscure ones, like what if the Horta found us, or
Pain.
the
Tribbles.
Tribbles would be a good one, or the space jellyfish from Farpoint.
What about Maressa's people?
Oh, Amres, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Cations, right?
Is that okay? Or the dolphins?
Oh yeah.
Oh gosh.
Yeah.
They're just mad that their species has been wiped out on Earth.
Cousins.
Because probably
I think they would
then
land and be like, "Well, who the heck are you?"
Yeah. What is this growth going on the land? Like, the water's
where
it's
at.
Well,
it's your fault for landing in Montana, so, really.
We got the Tholians.
Oh, yeah.
Tholians.
Now, yep. They seem fairly militaristic as well, like, but also intelligent. Like, I mean, they have research and development and weaponry and advanced
systems.
Well,
they'd have to, it'd be another word besides Terra, but they'd have to Tholian form the planet, because, you know, we're
totally informed.
Oh, that's true. So you know, probably wouldn't be interested at all because the planet is just completely not hospitable.
They need a class T planet.
Yeah. I would say.
Although,
that,
would there be another planet? Is there another planet in our solar system that would classify?
Mercury, maybe?
Like maybe they could do a little bit of something to Mercury or Jupiter.
They're Jupiter gaseous. Oh, yeah. So, I mean, they still need a solid planet, but yeah.
Gosh, if only I knew what a Class T plant was.
You know, we didn't talk about them really much. We mentioned them briefly, and we only get... It's tough to base your entire species on Jeffrey Combs' performance.
Which one?
But I would also say that a close relationship would be humans and Andorians. I get the kind of sense that they kind of share a lot of the same values.
Right. I mean, they're probably slightly militaristic more than we are.
Yeah, a little bit. But I would think that we would relate to them stronger than we would Vulcans. Like, on a very basic level.
I don't know if they'd be willing to put in the effort. They'd just be like, yeah, you guys are... That's it. Warp 1. All right, we're moving on.
Yeah, you're probably right.
Because I don't know who would want to stay. I mean, other than, like, the Cardassians, because they're just going to enslave us. But I don't know if there's a lot of species that would stay. They'd just be like, oh, I thought it was a real warp signature. We'll call you again in 20 years.
Okay, so I have two more. And then we can wrap up with some really wild ones if you guys want to. But the first one's going to be quick.
Binars?
Nope. The Borg.
Oh, I knew that was
But they were there in first contact. We saw how that went.
We know exactly how that would work, so that's why it's very quick. We didn't really have to get into it. It would not end well. We would just be Borg at this point, so that's fine. That's fine. Yeah. The second one is a little more interesting of a question because it cuts through the heart of this issue. Pick your timeline. Of course, I'm going to pick mid-23rd century, you know, Enterprise D sort of stuff. 24th century, sorry. But say we took Captain Picard's Enterprise, and he was encountering Bozeman, Montana for the first time.
It's almost like the episode First Contact.
How would we how would we handle First Contact with ourselves at that stage of development? That's kind of what the episode's about a little bit, but I kind of want to get into, like, what would we have learned from our 300 years in space, and would we help ourselves, or would it be more sticky than that?
Well, it's interesting because in First Contact, Well, I also compare it to Insurrection. But basically, like, how early do they get involved? Because I think in First Contact, they would have already, if they're going by Starfleet regulations, they would already be on Earth. Because they're sort of like the pre-spy program. Because they would have figured out somehow, I guess, that we were already developing warp power. And so they would have had their spies here in Montana, you know, checking things out. And then, again, who do you contact? Because it's just, there's no real government. So, but then, I think what they are going to offer, like, hey, you're going out into space and you have warp speed. We're here to say, you know, what it's like out there. And we're either, I mean, and what is it they're offering in First Contact? Is it, like, you Federation membership or just, like, we'll help you along? Or, I guess, I don't know.
I think it was just basically it's, well, you've seen Contact, right? The film that written by the late Carl Sagan, maybe, possibly.
Yeah.
I think it's basically that early of a stage. It's just to say, hey, you are a part of a interstellar community. Mm-hmm. There are other races out here that exist, that thrive, that want to meet you and want to contact you. But the message of First Contact essentially, again, we have to specify the episode, was to say, but this is just the first step, and it's early, and you're not going to jump head forth into the pool, you know what I mean? But, like, take a random season 4 TNG episode, and they're just, you know, oh, we're doing a planetary survey, and, oh, two parsecs away, we see that there was a space warp done.
Geordi, like, what'd you say?
Space warp done.
How would our heroes do that? Like, handle that situation later on? I don't know. I think it's an interesting concept, an interesting idea. Like, and would they have handled things differently than the Vulcans?
So are you speculating that, like, the Enterprise D comes out of time warp and accidentally destroys the Vulcan ship and now has to, but hear me though. I'm like, they realize that they have to, like, Bell Riot's substitution have to be like it because they took out of the Vulcan. They now have to be the nurturing force, but also not completely screw up the timeline. But they have to do something.
Now, is Picard putting on surgery and getting the pointed ears so he can match, or?
That's an interesting concept, and that would be interesting to discuss at a deeper level, but that's not what I want to talk about here. I want to talk about, basically, if there was an exact parallel to 2063 Earth, an exact parallel in terms of technology.
Okay, so it's not Earth, but it's just like
it's
us.
Exactly like it.
Got
would
it.
How would we handle things differently than the Vulcans did? And would we be better at it, or would we bungle it up?
Because I think the hard part is often, but not always, that Starfleet wants a united planet. So considering Earth is pretty messed up. We just have.
I don't think Earth would qualify.
Yeah,
exactly. So would we disqualify ourselves? And is that not hypocritical?
Well, I think it also depends because, you know, even if one section of the planet gets too technology advanced, you still have to intervene after a certain while, right? Because then, you know, I don't know.
Like, do we even qualify for First Contact under the Prime Directive or no?
Well, but remember, though, like you said, I mean, we do like to deal with a unified planet, but that's not necessarily the point of First Contact. The point of First Contact is to make contact and not necessarily, like, it's not like they instantly become a member of the Federation. It's just now they're connected to this greater galaxy of
planets.
They
just drop off a business card. Says Starfleet.
they're on the new network, the new internet.
Yeah, they're like, look, we got a podcast you can listen to, but
I don't know. These are all interesting questions, and it would be weird but neat to see what we would do in the future. Also, a little hypocritical, I think. I think that the Vulcans went in a little earlier than we would have.
Although, would we go in just as well because of nostalgia of it's like we remember when we were like that.
Man.
Everything in Star Trek tells me no, because it seems to be that they're more hesitant to jump in than...
Yeah, they're not Generation willing. Xers.
Okay. Well, lots of interesting conversation there. Any last-minute species that you want to see as our first contact? What about... Well, I heard the Bynars earlier.
Ooh, Bynars.
What about, those photonic beings from Voyager?
Well, how would they get here? Because we
species,
don't have holograms.
7-3-4.
Ether's 8-4-7-2. Yeah.
Kelpians was a joke, but that would also be an interesting conversation.
They'd be too scared to contact
anybody
us.
Else that you guys... Yeah, they would. You wouldn't think they would contact anybody outside their own race, but anything else that you guys want to talk about?
I want to know is who is the predator species on Kelpia, because... That seems like they're ones we need to be talking with, because...
That's actually a really interesting question, and what are their relations now?
Because it's like, I mean, they bash you over the head with the fact that they're a prey species, and it's like, we get it. They're, but basically, all that means is that they're not the top of the food chain. And it's like, so what is? Is it just some mindless beast that's just massive? And just overpowers them? Or is it another species that's technologically advanced?
That's a really interesting idea. And almost certainly something that the Discovery writers haven't thought about.
Oh, boy.
But seriously, like, what does that even mean? How would that even work in, like, if you're of a species that has technological ability to travel across the stars, you can definitely overcome any wildlife on your planet.
But we are so. Tosk.
Oh, Tosk. What if Tosk was our first... anyways, we could do this for days. We could literally do this for days. But that'll be where we stop. Let us know if you have an interesting choice for first contact specialist species, and we'll talk about them later on. But hey, and if people want to get a hold of you, where would they find you, Darren?
They can find me on Twitter, Twitch, and Instagram under Dr. Sci-Fi, or my website, drsci-fi.com.
Philip, what about you if they wanted to get a hold of you and say, hey, what if the first contact species was a North Carolinian?
Oh, cool. Well, they'd have great barbecue. They can find me on Twitter at NC Public Servant. And if you want to hear us talk about the Star Trek The Next Generation Doctor Who crossover graphic novel, we'll be talking about that in the next episode of Time and Space, a Doctor Who podcast.
You know, I think Doctor Who is a great example of a first contact, I don't know what you'd call him, specialist? Mm-hmm. Advisor? Like, he's always introducing new species to new species, so he's a good guy yep. for that.
Good
so.
Dating service.
Anyways, if people want to get... And if people want to get hold of me, they can find me on Twitter at OneUpDan. That's the number one, not the word. I'm Daniel Prue.
I'm Philip Gilfus.
I'm Darren Moser.
Stranded here on SETI Alpha 3.